there were opportunities for clarity for both staff and legislators in understanding what is a safe and professional workplace.
The legislature updates its sexual harassment policies. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 25th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, lawmakers ask the governor to declare the decline of Alaska Native languages an emergency.
To lose a language is to lose a way of thinking.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. 4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The state's legislative council adopted an updated sexual and other workplace harassment policy. The committee approved the measure unanimously. The new 6-page sexual harassment policy includes a more thorough definition of harassment than the 18-year-old 1-page policy. It also provides more details on how to report harassment. It sets out a timeline for investigations and it allows for independent investigations of alleged harassment by legislators. The council adopted a separate professional workplace conduct policy. It prohibits a variety of behavior. The policy bars legislators or supervisors from having consensual sex with their employees. It also bans conduct that creates an offensive workplace. And it prohibits disruptive behavior, including, quote, waving hands, arms, or fists, end quote. Wasilla Republican Representative David Eastman says he's concerned the workplace conduct policy could prevent lawmakers from asking hard questions.
There are a lot of things that are subjective that this policy touches on.
Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says the policy is an improvement. Until now, the legislature hasn't had a policy on conduct separate from the harassment policy.
There were opportunities for clarity for both staff and legislators in understanding what is a safe and professional workplace environment.
The legislature decided to revisit the harassment policy last year. Legislators cited concerns both inside the Capitol and nationally in seeking the review. Representative Dean Westlake of Kiana resigned in December due to sexual harassment allegations, and Representative Zach Fansler of Bethel resigned in February after a woman alleged he attacked her. Alaska House Speaker Bryce Edgman is defending the handling of a sexual harassment complaint against State Representative Justin Parrish of Juneau. The Juneau Empire reported Tuesday that Parrish was the subject of a sexual harassment complaint in February that outlined more than a year of unwanted public encounters between Parrish and an unidentified woman. In a statement Wednesday, Edgman said the legislature's human resources manager received a complaint January 30th from an unspecified local media outlet. The complaint included an allegation of off-site sexual harassment between Parrish and an employee of the outlet. Edgman says the media outlet investigated the complaint with the legislature's cooperation, and one of the outlet's attorneys proposed additional training. Edgman says the attorney did not want further action taken. He says the matter was closed without a finding of harassment under the legislature's policy. The Alaska Senate joined the House today in asking Governor Bill Walker to recognize that the decline of Alaska Native languages is an emergency. The Senate passed a resolution urging Walker to work with lawmakers and Alaska Native organizations to make the continued use of the languages a priority. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman talked with experts in Alaska Native cultures about the vote.
The state government recognizes 20 Alaska Native languages as official languages of the state, along with English. But a January report found that all of the Alaska Native languages could lose their last speakers by the end of the century. That report recommended the state declare a linguistic emergency. The House passed a resolution urging Governor Walker to do that in March, and the Senate acted yesterday. Sarah Dibdahl was among those who witnessed the vote. She's the Cultural Heritage and Education Manager for the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, And she notes people have dedicated their lives to the languages.
The Senate today, in passing that, recognizes the work of those individuals and then also sends a clear message to the governor that action needs to be taken.
The resolution doesn't spell out what that action will be, but the report by the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council says the state should make it policy to promote Alaska Native language schools wherever possible. For much of the 20th century, the federal and state government promoted policies that suppressed Alaska Native language and culture. They included forbidding the use of Alaska Native languages in village schools and boarding schools. Dibdahl says the resolution is progress, and she has some ideas on policies Walker could promote.
Immersion schools, geographical signage of our place names, you know, getting our place names back on the land. There's, you know, multiple opportunities that could be outlined.
The Advisory Council report also called on the state to create an Alaska Native School Board to promote Alaska Native tribal and charter schools, and to direct all University of Alaska branches to provide high-quality instruction in the language of the region. Dibdahl notes that one of the 20 languages, Eyak, lost its last fluent speaker in 2008.
To lose a language is to lose a way of thinking, and our values and our culture and our protocols are all tied into our language. And when you start to lose that, those other aspects of who we are go with it.
The Walker administration has been watching the resolution's progress. Barbara Blake is Walker's senior advisor for tribal affairs, fishing game, and marine resources.
You know, when you say the word emergency, there's a sense of immediacy to that. The governor's office definitely recognizes the sense of immediacy and the urgency behind any language initiative.
Blake says the administration will work with the council to follow up on the resolution. That could include steps like expanding the use of Alaska Native geographic names on signs, and it may support legislation for other steps that require changes in state law. Council member Lance Twitchell welcomed the resolution. He says at some point, the state must move from saying it's a priority to changing the way it does things.
I know some people don't believe that the government should have any role in language revitalization. But the difficulty is that the government had an active role in language destruction.
The House must decide whether to agree to changes the Senate made before the resolution is adopted. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Ketchikan High's academic decathlon team returns home after winning the national championship.
Not only win state for the first time in Southeast history, but first Alaskan team to get first place at nationals. That's pretty huge.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The U.S. Coast Guard announced today it will homeport four of its new fast-response cutters in Alaska. Two of the cutters will go to Kodiak, Seward and Sitka will each get one, and Ketchikan will retain the two new cutters previously stationed there. Those six cutters will replace seven older and smaller island-class patrol boats. Maintaining or growing the number of Coast Guard vessels in Alaska has been a priority for the state's congressional delegation. Both U.S. Senators and Congressman Don Young all issued press releases lauding the news and recounting their efforts to bring the new cutters to Alaska. Senator Dan Sullivan credited persistence and tireless advocacy for today's decision. Coast Guard Commandant Paul Zunkoft said the decision was based on a feasibility study in line with a process the Coast Guard established in 2015. In addition to the fast response cutters, Zunkoft also announced that Petersburg and Juneau will each get one smaller coastal patrol boat, which he says will leave the state with substantially more Coast Guard capacity than it has now. Cutters are not expected for 5 years or so. Zunkoft says Kodiak, Seward, and Sitka will need new housing and infrastructure improvements before then. A $9 million oil spill cleanup is winding down on the southern end of Shuyak Island in an area that's critical habitat for marine mammals like sea otters and stellar sea lions. The spill happened late February when a dock at Port Williams collapsed, causing a building and a container filled with fuel to fall into the water, releasing an estimated 3,000 gallons of oil. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
Commander James Binneker of the U.S. Coast Guard is helping lead the cleanup. He says spill responders have met the Coast Guard's goals for the response.
We wanted no oil left on the rocky surfaces or the pilings that we could access that where oil would come off when rubbed. You know, so we don't want anything that's going to oil a bird or any marine mammal or any wildlife that gets on that beach.
Besides using booms to contain the oil, responders also cleaned up the debris from the fallen structure and pressure wash harder surfaces. The unified response includes contractor Alaska Shadow and the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, or DEC. According to the latest DEC situation report, responders have collected more than 1,800 bags of oiled absorbent material so far, including from heavy oil called bunker sea fuel, in addition to other oils like diesel and gasoline. Binneker says there is still some oil in the remaining two structures on the water, and the person currently managing the site agreed to allow the responders to remove a portion of it. And Binneker says now it's out of the Coast Guard's hands.
The remaining pier structures are not unlike many throughout Alaska, and it's not our determination at this point that it poses an imminent threat of collapse and pollution.
Jeff Merrill of DEC says the state is going to check out tanks held in a structure further up the property. DEC has an ongoing case related to the tanks. According to the Coast Guard, in 2013, one of the tanks was shot, and that led to a leak of oil onto the property. Merrill says that's what they're going to look into as part of their next steps.
What we're going to investigate is the impact of that leak on the, you know, on the ground and soils and potential contamination.
Chugiak resident Mark Kroll says he's the effective manager of the land. He explains he took on that role in 2012 in light of the poor health of the owner, who he says is a friend of his, and he says he was running a lodge in the area until last year. Kroll says vandalism led to the leak on the property, and he flew to Shuyak Island to take care of it.
There was a slight sheen, but not much of it evidently got to the water when the vandals shot it. Most of it absorbed into the soil on the hill above the water.
Kroll says at the time it was either clean up the land or else the property owner would deal with the more expensive fines from the Coast Guard. He says he shipped in oil response equipment and footed the bill himself, which he says ended up being a little more than $40,000, a cost which he says contributed to him closing the lodge. Kroll says he stored the remainder of the oil from the tank in a container in one of the buildings at the pier. That's where it stayed until strong winds knocked it into the water in February, causing the most recent spill. Kroll was employing a caretaker for the property at the time. He says the caretaker emailed him the day the container carrying the fuel fell into the water. Kroll was unclear about what he intends to do with oil still stored there. He also indicated he was trying to end his involvement with the property. Kroll did not respond to further emails seeking clarification by deadline. A representative from DEC says that the state is still investigating who might be the responsible party. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The State Transportation Department is gearing up for another busy construction season on South Central highways, and delays for motorists could be felt most acutely on two popular thoroughfares. The heavily trafficked Glen Highway will see more work resume on multiple projects. One is resurfacing north of Anchorage to remove ruts in the pavement. Closer to Palmer, a new project will likely overlap with ongoing construction on the Palmer-Wasilla Highway, the only other route into Palmer for commuters between the two cities. DOT spokesperson Shannon McCarthy says it's still unclear how long Palmer drivers will be navigating both of those construction zones in their area.
This is the time of year people are concerned about construction in their area, so I definitely say that we've heard from folks wanting to know construction plans, and we'll know more once we have a successful bidder on board.
The south of Anchorage, McCarthy says there are massive construction projects starting on the Kenai Peninsula, as well as on the Seward Highway, which is getting a new look closer to Girdwood.
That's going to be widening the road, big shoulders, passing lanes, which everyone will like when they're finished. and then some dedicated two-way left turn lanes so that folks can get safely to some of the attractions in that area. And then once you get down to the Kenai, it's actually a huge construction year for the Kenai. There's two large projects on the Sterling, and then, of course, Kenai Spur Highway, so the number of projects.
And that's just to name a few. McCarthy says the best way to keep on top of when and where various projects might cause delays is by checking alaskanavigator.org. In order to create the next generation of learners, innovators, and leaders, Alaska needs hardworking and capable teachers. It takes excellent instructors who create classroom environments that inspire excitement and passion for learning. Alaskans can honor the work of creative educators in their communities by nominating them to be the next Teacher of the Year. The nomination deadline for the 2019 Alaska Teacher of the Year is coming up at the end of the month. Bob Williams with the State Department of Education says that the selected educator will compete with 53 other teachers from all U.S. states and territories in the National Teacher of the Year competition.
We're looking for teachers that are an expert in their field who guide students of all backgrounds and abilities to achieve excellence. We're looking for a teacher that collaborates with colleagues, students, and families to create a school culture of respect and success. And we're looking for a teacher that deliberately connects the classroom and key stakeholders to foster a strong community at large.
Ben Walker, a science teacher at Romig Middle School in Anchorage, was the 2018 Teacher of the Year. Williams says Teachers of the Year nominees come from all corners of the state, and he encourages Alaskans to nominate great teachers in classrooms of all sizes for the national competition. It's been more than 20 years since an Alaskan teacher won the national spot. Elaine Griffith of Chiniac Elementary was the 1995 National Teacher of the Year.
So I guess one thing I really want to stress is that every day there are absolutely amazing things happening in classrooms across Alaska. And also, never, to your listeners out there, never underestimate the power and influence that you have by thanking or nominating a teacher that's made a difference in your life or the life of your child.
Nomination forms for the 2019 Alaska Teacher of the Year can be found on the Department of Education's website, education.alaska.gov. The deadline for submission is April 30th.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the Federal Plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency. If you love a good mystery, Thursday nights on Alaska Public Media TV is the place for you. Join us every week as we search for clues, put the pieces together, and figure out who done it. Mystery Thursdays only on Alaska Public Media TV.
The most famous river breakup event in Alaska has ticket holders on edge. The Nenana Ice Classic tripod is still upright on a mushy layer of Tanana River ice. People from all over the world pay $2.50 for a chance to win the lottery by correctly guessing when the river ice will go out each year. Brian Brentschneider, with our Ask a Climatologist, says it's not just a game. The Ice Classic has established an important historical record.
We've had continuous breakup records going back now over 100 years, since 1917. And so this has been it's really important, not just from a local kind of informational perspective, but it has a scientific value that is really, really important. A lot of scientific studies have used this information. So right now, this year, if you look at the webcam of the Tanana River at Nenana, so far, it looks like it's holding in place. There's no snow on the ice, so everything is kind of progressing where we're 4 or 5, maybe 7 days away from breakup.
And where would that put us in the historical perspective?
Well, historical, you have to look at this in a couple of ways. You can just do one kind of long-term, 100-year average, or you can kind of look at what the trend has been in the last 40 or 50 years, which is really more important. So the last 40 or 50 years, that trend line has been decreasing. And so we would expect then breakup to be somewhere around April 28th, just if we knew nothing else about the conditions this year. And so far, the conditions look like, in the forecast from the Alaska River Forecast Center, looks like maybe 2 or 3 days later than what we would expect just based on climatology. So approximately, 1st of May or so.
And what are the factors that are going into that?
So on any given year, the factors that are going to be the most critical for breakup are how thick the ice is. And this year, the ice is running a little thinner than normal. It's going to be how much snow is on the ice and how much snow is in the basin. So that's going to infect the meltwater coming into the system. And then what the temperatures are going to be like. And those temperatures are going to either directly melt the ice or melt snow or not in the basin.
Does a historical record tell us anything about what time it's likely to break up?
That's an interesting question because normally, probably 80% of years, the river there breaks up in the mid-afternoon. And so what happens is, as you get up to the breakup date, the actual day of breakup, it's usually kind of sitting right on the edge of, is it going to break up or not? And it's that afternoon solar energy that usually tips it over the edge. And so, if you're buying a ticket, you're going to want to if you want to maximize your chances of winning, you're going to want to pick a time in the late afternoon. If there is a flood of water, like from an ice jam that's released, then kind of all bets are off, no pun intended. Now, if you want to buy a ticket and you want to maximize your chances of not having to share your winnings, then you would want to pick a time, in the middle of the night, because most people kind of know that the breakup's going to be in the afternoon. So if you pick a time in the middle of the night, you're most likely not going to win. But if you do win, you're most likely not going to have to share your winnings with anyone. So that's a little ice classic betting strategy.
Brian Brentschneider is a climatologist based in Anchorage with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He checks in with Alaska's Energy Desk each week as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. Ketchikan High School's academic decathlon team received a hero's welcome Monday afternoon as they walked up the airport ferry ramp. A crowd of determined well-wishers braved a wind-driven downpour to cheer the K-High team's return from Texas, where they took top honors at the national competition. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
The rain was coming down by the bucketful and sideways because of all the wind. But that didn't deter a big crowd from hanging around outside and waiting for Ketchikan's Academic Decathlon, or ACDC, team to arrive. It's not often, after all, that a small island community in Alaska brings home a first-place national win. This is a big deal. And in Ketchikan, that means bagpipes. Before all the cheering and piping, I caught up with the team at the airport and talked with a few members while we waited in baggage claim. Largum Zuda is a senior this year. He says winning first place in the small schools division is a great way to end his high school career.
It's still kind of settling in that we won. That's pretty freaking amazing that we were able to make history twice, not only win state for the first time in Southeast history, but first Alaskan team to get first place at nationals. That's pretty huge.
Zuda says winning was especially gratifying because they were competing against all the top schools throughout the United States. K-High senior Lydia Sumrall has been with the Academic Decathlon team 3 years. She says the team has gotten stronger every year, and winning state proved that. Sumrall says they were just happy to be part of the national competition in Frisco, Texas.
I think we went down there not necessarily expecting to win, but knowing that it was possible. And so the fact that we went above and beyond and did win was really incredible for us. Like, it just over the wall happy.
Sumrall says science is her best area, but she enjoys all the objective categories.
The fact that the objective tests have such meticulous right or wrong answers gets me like really driven to study and to know the material. And so whenever I do well on one of those, it's just very fulfilling to know that I got to that deep of a level to know what was going to be on the test.
Sumrall says she hopes Ketchikan's accomplishments this year will inspire other small schools in Alaska. This year was the first year with Academic Decathlon for senior Adrian Ronquillo. He says he heard about the team last year from his cousin.
I saw her working on something in her living room. It was a bunch of guides, and this pertained to Academic Decathlon. And basically, I asked her what it was all about, and she's like, basically, we study for fun. And I was like, why?
So Ronquillo didn't sign up that year, but he was recruited this year by some friends. He studied for fun, and now he's got a national championship medal hanging around his neck. Sitting on the ferry, damp from a brief dash through the rain, team coach Peter Stanton says the national competition experience was intense. But other than making sure the students were where they should be, he didn't have a whole lot to do.
I just had to sit back and watch and hope for the best.
Stanton says they had an inkling by the time of the award ceremony that they were going to do well.
We knew what our competition was and what other small schools in the nation were closest to us. And we heard, you know, Monmouth Academy from Maine, they got third place, we heard that. Then we heard Da Vinci Academy from Utah. And at that point, I think most all of us realized, wow, we actually did it. You know, if those two took third and second, those were our closest competitors. Yeah. And then they called us up, and it was pretty amazing.
Ketchikan is the first Alaska team to win at nationals. Stanton says a likely contributing factor is that previous state teams to attend that competition were from larger schools. They competed in Division II. Ketchikan is small enough to qualify for Division III. At the same time, though, those kids worked hard, and their success is well-deserved. Just ask all those soaking wet people waiting at the ferry terminal. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Finally tonight, a correction. In a story about mushing champion Hugh Neff being censured by the Yukon Quest for poor dog handling, we mistakenly said Neff had run the quest 17 times. He has in fact run the race 18 times. That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Liz Ruskin, Casey Grove, and Annie Fight in Anchorage, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Layla Carey in Ketchikan. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart. Protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Join Alaska Public Media TV every week for Think Wednesday, featuring a dynamic lineup of programs exploring the thrilling world of nature, technology, and science. Think Wednesday explores the mysteries of our world and our universe, bringing the most exciting and inspiring stories that provide the answers that curious minds crave. Think Wednesday, every Wednesday beginning at 7 p.m., only on Alaska Public Media TV. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.